This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave, sitting in for Terry Gross. We were very sorry to hear today of the death of poet Jane Kenyon. She died Saturday of leukemia at the age of 47. She was at her home in New Hampshire in the company of her husband, fellow poet Donald Hall. Jane Kenyon wrote 4 volumes of poetry. Many of her poems appeared in The New Yorker, The Atlantic Monthly, The Paris Review, and other publications. Adrian Rich said of Kenyon's poetry, "Tranquil on the surface, Kenyon's New England landscapes often suggest troubled depths, never complacency." Fresh Air critic Lloyd Schwartz was a friend of Kenyon's and an admirer of her work. He says that beneath that darkness was a profound and spiritual optimism. In fact, Kenyon often wrote about the restorative power of nature in the midst of depression, illness, and death. Terry Gross talked with Jane Kenyon and her husband Donald Hall in September 1993. Ironically, much of the interview was about how they dealt as a couple with Donald's illness. It wasn't until several months later that Jane Kenyon was diagnosed with leukemia. We begin with Jane Kenyon reading an excerpt from a poem she'd written about her husband's cancer surgery.
Chrysanthemums. The doctor averted his eyes while the diagnosis fell on us, as though the picture of the girl hiding from her dog had suddenly fallen off the wall. We were speechless all the way home. The light seemed strange. A weekend of fear and purging. Determined to work, he packed his dictaphone, a stack of letters, and a roll of stamps. At last, the day of scalpels, blood, and gauze arrived. Eyes closed, I lay on his tightly made bed, waiting. From the hallway, I heard an old man whose nurse was helping him to walk. That Howard Johnson's. It's nothing but the same thing over and over again. That's right. It's nothing special. Late in the afternoon, when slanting sun betrayed a wad of dust under the bedside stand, I heard the sound of casters and footsteps slowing down. The attendants asked me to leave the room while they moved him onto the bed, and the door remained closed for a long time. Evening came. While he dozed fitfully, still stupefied by anesthetics, I tried to read, my feet propped on the rails of the bed. Odette's chrysanthemums were revealed to me, ranks of them in the house where Swan, jealousy constricting his heart, made late night calls. And while I read, pausing again and again to look at him, the smell of chrysanthemums sent by friends wavered from the sill, mixing with the smells of drastic occasions and disinfected sheets.
That's an excerpt of Jane Kenyon's poem Chrysanthemums, and the poem is included in her new collection of poetry, Constance. When you write a poem that's about Don, or Don, when you write a poem that has to do with Jane, do you show it to each other right away?
Not right away, but we always work together on poems.
Even the poems about each other?
Oh, yes, yes. We also work with other friends. Each of us has our own committee, you might say, and we work very closely with other friends. But we do indeed work on each other's poems, and there are times when we just... I simply have to say to Don, well, I can't tell you about this because I just can't get far enough away from it to have much judgment about it.
Jane, at what point in the development of Chrysanthemums did you show the poem to Don?
Well, it was many months after I started it, and I felt uncomfortable about this poem because I was revealing very personal things in it, and I wasn't sure how Don would feel about it. And I remember prefacing my showing this poem to him by saying, you may feel that this is too personal and that I didn't have a right to reveal these things. It's best to be careful about hurting people in this way.
Because I wasn't hurt at all, but I suppose I'm glad to be asked.
And then, Don, did you work on that poem at all?
I can't remember. I mean, almost always I have something to say. It's famous in our house that Jane will show me a poem and I'll say, "This is going to be good." And Jane will say, "Going to be, eh?" You know, I mean, I love her poems. But I'm always telling her to take out the word "and" there and take the comma out here. Take this line from the end of one line and put it at the beginning of the next. And she tells me the same things, of course. Endlessly. And we often do what the other says, but not always. I don't remember what in particular I said about this, but the fact that it was about me and my illness would not keep me from having ideas about the sound of it, the style of it, the poetry of it. I mean, at first, I read it, it's a poem about me, kabump, I'm struck by it, and then by that fact, and then I start hearing the cadences and looking at the images, and if I see anything that doesn't sound quite right to me, I'll tell her. That's what we're useful for to each other in this particular way.
Is there ever any friction between the two of you of who has ownership over a certain experience that you both shared, you know, and who has more of the right to write about it?
Well, sometimes when something particularly piquant happens to us, one of us will say, "Jump ball."
Or dibs. I remember being with a bunch of poets years and years ago back at Ann Arbor. Jane was one of them. And somebody said something terrific, you know, a good phrase, just adjective, a noun or something. And everybody started yelling, "Dibs, dibs." On that. I don't think that we've really had any friction on this. We have written about the same thing, but we write differently enough. We can do that. It's all right.
Poets Donald Hall and Jane Kenyon, recorded in 1993. Jane Kenyon died this weekend at the age of 47. We'll continue in a moment. This is Fresh Air. We continue with an interview recorded in 1993 with poets Jane Kenyon and Donald Hall.
You've both written about battles with depression. And I'm wondering if you think it makes you more sensitive to each other's mood swings, or if it causes certain problems if you're not on the same mood swing schedule, so to speak.
We try to arrange so that we're not both down or both up at the same time. I think that we try to arrange for one of us to be manic and the other depressed at the same time so that it's like Plato's ball, or is it Plato or Socrates, who first imagined the human being as a sphere. You know, if you put the manic, right, and the depressive together, press them together into a ball, you'd have a whole human being. And I've often thought that if someone took the two of us and shook us up in a brown paper bag and turned us out, there would really be one complete human being.
We have had moments when we were both pretty low, which are very hard moments, because when you're so low, you can't help the other person. But that hasn't happened very often, as Jane says. I think that there is a mechanism in us that tries to, or that is able to compensate when the other is inevitably lower. When I think I had my most recent illness, Jane had been rather low, and she just rose to the challenge totally and was totally nurturing and... then when I was better, she sagged down again, and I was able to help a little. I noticed that. Maybe I'm inaccurate, but it seems
no,
something like
that. No, I did make a special effort to pull myself together there.
It's the time when you think you cannot possibly make an effort, that you're making every effort you can, and circumstances require something from you, and you have it that you didn't think you had.
Jane, I'm thinking here of a poem that you wrote called Having It Out with Melancholy, in which you're basically addressing melancholy.
Yes.
And you say to it, "You taught me to exist without gratitude. You ruined my manners toward God. Quote, we're here simply to wait for death. The pleasures of earth are overrated." How often do you find yourself thinking that now?
Well, it happens. It happens despite everybody's best efforts and all the fancy pharmaceutical footwork that could be imagined. I began this poem not when I was at the absolute nadir, but close to it. I thought to myself, sometime I must write a poem in which I reveal the experience of depression so that people who have never experienced such awful agony, inward agony, so that those people might understand a little more what it's like and stop telling us to shape up, go buy a hat, go take a nice walk. I really meant to speak for all of us who have been incapacitated by our emotional life. And even though I was too low when I conceived of the poem, I was too low to actually begin working on it. I did conceive of the poem when I was in fact a very, very depressed state.
Don, in writing about T.S. Eliot, you were quoting Eliot as saying, no honest poet can ever feel quite sure of the permanent value of what he has written. He may have wasted his time and messed up his life for nothing.
Yep.
Do you both feel confident of the value of your work?
No. Not at all. It is a matter of mood. I mean, in the morning, when I've been working, if I wander out and see Jane some mornings, I may say, mocking myself, I am great or I am immeasurably great. And another morning, I will characterize myself in terms of an obscenity, meaning I'm no good at all, I never was. And I feel it strongly then, and part of my mind also knows, tomorrow you'll feel different. You don't know. I don't know. There are times when I get depressed about my work and I think nothing is ever any good, more seriously than the mood thing I was talking about, when I really, really feel very depressed about everything I've spent my life on. And there are other times when I feel, not so much confident about it, just happy with it, happy with the endeavor, with the continuing endeavor. That does not translate into anything like knowledge that my work will endure. I had to give up on that a long time ago. When I was, say, 15 years old, I thought I wanted to be, a great poet. I wanted to be on the top of the mountain. And I thought that at some point I would find out whether I got there or not. Well, when I was in my 20s, I began to realize that you never know. And when I asked Eliot the question, do you know you're good? Eliot was a Nobel Prize winner. Everybody thought he was the greatest poet since Dante, practically. I mean, it was a moment of Eliot worship. And when I asked him that, I had the suspicion that he would say he didn't know, and that's exactly what he said, as you quoted him.
Jane, what about you?
Well, the conviction that you may be writing something worth having written comes and goes. But the thing that does not come and go, the thing that remains constant, I think, for both of us, is the desire to really make art and to embody the truth and to make something beautiful and to make something that really makes people's lives better. Gives them deeper understanding of their own existence and great joy because of beauty. That desire never goes.
Poets Jane Kenyon and Donald Hall recorded in 1993. Jane Kenyon died Saturday of leukemia. A book of her new and selected poems will be published in March 1996 by Gray Wolf Press. This is Fresh Air.